O my Lord, persons who are bereft of the all-auspicious performance of chanting and hearing about your transcendental activities are certainly unfortunate and are also bereft of good sense. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for a very little while. Repetitive, please. O my Lord, persons who are bereft of the performance of chanting and hearing about your transcendental activities are certainly unfortunate and are also bereft of good sense. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for a very little while. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The next question is why people are against such auspicious activities as chanting and hearing the glories and pastimes of the Lord, which can bring total freedom from the cares and anxieties of material existence. The only answer to this question is that they are unfortunate because of supernatural control due to their offensive activities performed simply for the sake of sense gratification. The Lord's pure devotees, however, take compassion upon such unfortunate persons and in a missionary spirit try to persuade them into the line of devotional service. Only by the grace of pure devotees can such unfortunate men be elevated to the position of transcendental service. Om Gyana Tumarandasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tarine. So I thought it would be interesting to go through the word for word again. Again, this is a kind of a continuation of a series of verses that are highlighting the predicament of everyone, all the living entities in this world. And the first word here is divana, by fate or misfortune. And what it means is that everyone's under the control of supernatural power. People want to be kind of macho or powerful, but they're under control of supernatural power. The power of demigods, the power of fate, and they are completely subservient to it. Now, it's so powerful and it's so illusory that people don't even know that there is such a power. And we're fortunate that the Bhagavatam is pointing out the way of the world, the way of the universe, quite immediately. You're subservient to higher beings. We've heard those verses that we suffer from three things. We suffer from our own self, we suffer from others, and we suffer from the demigods. So the demigods are wielding supernatural powers, and they're doing it for good reason. They're assisting the living entity in the living entity's desire to be having the sense of freedom. And they're doing it under the guidance and sanction of the Supreme Lord. They're doing their duty very, very well. They're wielding that supernatural power. So this is the placement. We're not independent. We are controlled by supernatural power. Super means obviously super, and natural means it's natural. It's beyond our realm to understand. I mean, can you imagine just the idea of any demigod somewhere in the universe, and they're aware of us by their exhibition of their powers, and they're controlling our lives. So this is the first thing, is that we're we, they, we said they're te, it's talking about us, the living entities. We have somewhere or other in a bad state. Hatadiya, this means, the word hatadiya means it's been taken from us. We've lost it. It's been ripped from our very existence, killed, hurt, lost. Our intelligence has been ripped from us, taken from us, killed from us. Sounds very harsh. And the word dia means intelligence. Here, the word translating is memory. Intelligence means in the, let's get the verse out, in the later canto, the fourth canto, it tells you what intelligence, the symptoms and characteristics of intelligence are. Just give me 1 second, let me find it again. Just 1 second. This is from the third canto, chapter 26. I'm going to come to it shortly. And it's text 30. And it says that doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence, buddhi. So all these things have been gone. So here, particularly what's been mentioned is memory. We've lost our memory of something very, very important. And what have we lost our memory of? Well, we can refer to the previous verse where Lord Brahma had the great fortune of seeing Garbhodakshaya Vishnu lying at the bottom of the ocean, and he was beautiful, he had a beautiful face, all his jewels were described, the color of his garments were described, his belt were described that his feet is lifted up so you can see his lotus feet, and he's smiling. This is what we've forgotten. We've forgotten this picture in our minds of the Supreme Lord. Also, we've forgotten the other form of the Lord that we sing the song every morning. And the first one is from the Brahma Samhita. Again, Brahma's prayers. He says, Chintamani prakarasatma sukalpa vriksha lakshavriteshu surabir abhipalayantam Lakshmi sahasra shata sambrahma sevyamanam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desire in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. So we've forgotten him. We've forgotten this great, wonderful person that Lord Brahma is praising. And this, the prayers go on. So that memory has been taken from us. That intelligence has been taken from us. Bhavata prasangat, this absorption. Prasanga means, here probably, it's been translated by the word from the topics. My understanding is that when Srila Prabhupada was translating these books, he had in front of him translations of various Bhagavatams, and he would just more or less take the translations and put it in. And the word for word was done by Prajumna. He would kind of backtrack it. There's a Sanskrit, and then he would put the English words into it. But I think when your own study, sometimes it's worth going into the actual Sanskrit word to see different ways how it could be understood. For example, here the word prasanga means, adherence, it means attachment, inclination or devotion to. It's an absorption of mind. You're really absorbed in something. And so that absorption in the Lord has somehow been affected. In one of the early verses, we had the word asat prasanga, which means people were absorbed in the asat, that which isn't real. So, and this is our problem. The problem is that we have become absorbed in this what is not real, and we've forgotten what is real. And in other words, why? Why is it so cruel? Powerful energies afoot. You've been ripped, it's been taken from you, your ability to remember. Why is this? Well, that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to absorb ourselves, this world, so well that we needed to lose all this memory. For example, if you try to do some mischief, and there's someone looking over your shoulder, it's very difficult to do you mischief. So you need a separation from the overseer and the actual activities. So Krishna has arranged by our own insistence, you could say, to put it in a place where we can live without feeling all these things. So now we're kind of we're on the path, you could say, of realignment. We devote you all here, the devotees of Krishna, those who are studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, trying to rebalance things. I've had enough of the asat prasanga, and now we're trying to become realigned with the path back home, back to Godhead. We've kind of left it long enough. Now it's time to go back home. So here we're hearing the dilemma that this powerful demigods will take away your intelligence to enable you to enjoy this material world. And this is what's been described in this verse. Sarvashu bo pashamad vimukendriya ye. That the this everything is inauspicious. Inauspicious means things that are not in your best interest. So it's not necessarily things always transcendental. Anything you do that's not in your best interest is inauspicious. And this is everywhere. The whole material world is sarva ashubha. It's all inauspicious. And upashamana, it debilitates. It takes you down. It calms down. It's cessation, negation, mitigation. It's reducing. For example, as these chapters proceed, I was recently in Sweden, and there are two chapters ahead. So what you're going to hear is about Lord Brahma, and he's in the second part of his life, the second 50 of his life. And there's a kind of, his life is described as under half, two halves, two vast halves of life. And we notice as when we reach the kind of cusp of our midlife, of course, we don't know when our midlife is. We can go at any time. But more or less people, if you ever have the morbid fascination of walking around a cemetery and you look at the headstones, you can see the age of people who die, 75, 60, 80, 90. Occasionally, some might be older. But in that region, so you could say 75, 80, we may go. So 35, 40 is your midpoint. And you notice that once you get going to 40, yes, I'm powerful, I'm strong, my senses are virile and active. And once you go that cusp, oh my God, it's downhill. It's downhill all the way. Things you could do with ease when you're young are not so easy once you get past that midpoint, and it's going to go down. And that's the nature of it. Because we're not meant to stay here. It's all, although it's painful, it's about reminders, come on guys, this is not really the goal of life, to enjoy these things. So it's debilitating, it's curbing down. And here the word is, next word is vimukha. Vimukha indriyaye. We've turned our backs on Krishna. Chaturmukha, Lord Brahma's got four faces. I'm facing you. If I turn my back on you, then it's kind of an insult. You know, you go to someone, you want to talk to them, they turn their back on you, you feel. So we've turned our backs on Krishna. Our senses, which are tools, they're just simply tools, how you use them. For example, you can use this microphone to speak into, or you can turn it into a club and you can beat someone over the head with it. So it's simply a tool. It's how you're using it. You get the benefit from it. So the senses are simply tools, but we're using our tools to not work in the interests of the Supreme Lord. We're misusing those tools, and therefore we're creating, probably use the word here, he says in the purport, he says, offensive activities, supernatural control due to our offensive activities. Very very strong words. We being offensive, our activities are being offensive. We're misusing things. We're misusing our senses, and therefore we're creating this separation between us and the Supreme Lord. And that's what offenses do. The 10 offenses to the holy name, the offenses to the deity worship. If you offend the holy name, then you don't get the reciprocation. You don't feel the reciprocation of the holy name. You don't feel the benefit or the power of the holy name. When you offend the deities, you're separated from your ability to absorb yourself in that worship. So offensive behavior creates a separation. Aparada. It takes you away from something. So we need to be separated to enjoy the material world. So Krishna's arranging it, he's describing here in the Bhagavatam, that we've created a system so you can really get into it. And you're really going to enjoy like anything. You can really, really enjoy. However, next line. Kurvanti kama sukha lesha lavaya dina. That people are acting for kama, sense gratification. They want to enjoy themselves. They want to find happiness in it. They want to find, because you're not just about just want to enjoy your senses, but you want to find the happiness from enjoying your senses. Sometimes when you try to enjoy your senses, you don't find any happiness in it. You find it uncomfortable. But we're driven by the desire for happiness, for sense gratification. But the word lesha, although it's been translated here as brief, it means very little. Iota, trace, modicum. Anyone ever use the word modicum these days? It's very, very rare to find that word modicum. Even iota is occasionally used, but it means very little. You want satisfaction of the senses, but what you get is very, very little. To us, sometimes it seems though a powerful thing that you want to enjoy, but actually it's just insubstantial. It's not very much. And it doesn't last very long. It doesn't last very long. Sometimes I depress myself. I go on holiday sometimes. You go on a vacation. And you start analyzing, well, what am I actually enjoying? What's the enjoyable bit in this whole thing? You're traveling somewhere with the idea of enjoying, and there's kind of an expectation of enjoying, but are you enjoying the car? Well, if you're driving, you probably, you know, you've got to stay awake and you've got the drivers there. What are you enjoying? Okay, maybe we're going to get there and enjoy it. So the traveling isn't actually enjoyable. Maybe when if you're flying an airplane, maybe you might find some enjoyment in the foyer while you're waiting. What enjoyment will you find? You're waiting, you're looking at your clock all the time. You're checking when you're going to go. You're always checking the time like that. So what do you enjoy? Okay, you get on the plane. Then what are you enjoying in the plane? Okay, shall I push the buttons and see what's happening in front of me? How much enjoyment can you get? And then you get there. And sometimes you get there and, okay, the weather's great. But how much of the great weather can you enjoy? Of course, we're from England. We're very happy when there's a sun. Other places, the sun shines all the time. The skies are always blue. Sometimes people who are from those countries, when they come to this country, they find it quite depressive because we get gray skies and it's gloomy. When we go to those sunny places, oh, it's wonderful. But how much can you enjoy? Oftentimes the people there don't enjoy that sun who live there as much as we think that they would be enjoying if we were living there or we'd be enjoying. They don't go there. For example, my wife's from South Africa. Beautiful, you know, blue beaches, waves, warm. But people don't go to the beach that often, I would say. Not very often. Sometimes they go once a year. So it's, you know, your opportunity to enjoy something, but they don't take advantage of it. So our enjoyment is not very, it doesn't last very long. And how much of it is it? So the Bhagavatam is saying this, that we want to enjoy ourselves, we want to enjoy our senses, we want to find happiness from it, but it's not very substantial. And it doesn't last very long. He's trying to, he coaches, don't waste your time, guys, because you're not going to find the happiness. You think you're going to find happiness. That's the kind of allurement in the that's pulling you in to keep going and keep going. And that's what you want. the hope for happiness. But you're not going to get it there. Laba bihibita manaso kushalani shashvat. That the living beings are overwhelmed by greed. Laba abibuta. We sometimes hear about the Mayapur temple. Adbuta mandir. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was envisaging this wonderful building manifesting across the river. So this loba, this greed, has wonderfully captured people's mind, their mind, manasa. Their minds are simply absorbed with the idea of, I got to get a bit more. I haven't quite got enough. Somewhere other, if I get more, then I will be able to enjoy my senses. I'll really feel, and this goes on and on. I recall one time I met this gentleman. I was doing book distribution, and he owned 14 houses. I mean, you can imagine, you've got 14 houses, all the revenue from that. We have devotees who've got 14 houses, some of them got more. And he said, I would like 28 houses. He wanted twice as much. And I've heard it said that there's been some studies that whatever people have, if they think if I get twice as much, then I'll be happy. But we see that in the realms of people who've got lots more, they still want more. There's something about whatever they have didn't satisfy them. So this greed, this desire for more, is overwhelming the mind. It simply does not satisfy the mind. You cannot get satisfaction by acquisition. It's not what you have that makes you satisfied. And those of us who have seen people, I mean, I recall I was on this bus one time in India and looking out on the street and people living there in the kind of gap between the two roads, and they seemed pretty happy. There was something that their happiness wasn't based on acquisition. It was based on something else inside. Okay, they were trying to get a bit back of acquisition as well, but there was some fundamental thing that was satisfying them despite their ability, their attempts to acquire various things. So this is not saying don't try and acquire things, because the material body has to have things. But it's about not being greedy about it. You've got to do your duty. You've got to try and earn money. You've got to try and take care of your family. But the idea is not to be excessively about it. The Bhagavad Gita talks about moderation in your eating, sleeping, and recreation. That's also there. You have to have a certain amount of recreation, otherwise you'll go nuts. So not too much, not too little. So don't, you have to aspire, but don't become overwhelmed. But people are overwhelmed by it because they never feel they've got enough. And then just when you feel you're getting enough, it's all gone. Or someone takes it. Or as we heard recently in Los Angeles, the place that people aspire to go to. Los Angeles is a really precarious place. The river, all the water that people use in Los Angeles comes from like 40 miles away. It's pumped from the river. I can't remember the name of the river. It's all pumped there. If you let Los Angeles be as it is, it's a desert. If ever you fly from the East Coast to the West Coast, you start flying all this vast tracts of desert. It's just barren land. Hundreds and thousands of miles, just desert. And we don't like deserts. They're not very pleasant. It's dry and arid, and it's, you know, you can eat cactus. So Los Angeles is a very artificial place. And it's very hot. Oh, it's great. You can go there because it's hot. But Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. People's life is like tottering on like a drop of water dangling off the edge of a leaf. So there we can see their life is tottering on the edge of a flame. Suddenly a flame can take everything away. And people who are famous people in the world, suddenly their 14 million pound house is boom, gone in a few moments. So acquisition doesn't make you happy. In the pursuit of it, you won't find satisfaction. It agitates your mind in the process of wanting to know something. We know ourselves. When we analyze our own self, when we see that greediness in us, we feel the pain of it. the dirty, we feel kind of contaminated by wanting, feeling greedy about something. So the pursuit of more doesn't make you happy, and the acquisition of it doesn't make you happy, and you can lose it at any moment. And therefore, akushalani shashvat. It's, you know, akushalani means, where's the word now? Wholesome, virtuous, good, skillful. And akushala means it's not wholesome. It's not virtuous. It's not good. It's all the bad things. And it's always the case. So this is the material world. Actually, another thing that came to mind is that I missed the one word out there, which was dina. That people are very poor. Doesn't mean necessarily poor financially. It just means, oh my God, they're in a poor situation. So although we have this, you could say, connection with Krishna, we are part of his family. We were there. It's a bit safe to say controversial. We were there with Krishna. We were in that pastime. That's where I read that verse in the Brahma Samhita. We have this kind of, that's our home where we're going back to. And now we're really in a bad situation. We're now living this life with these senses that aren't going to satisfy us, and they're paltry. And therefore our condition is very poor. There's a verse that... There's a verse in the Care Protection World called Gamcha Dharma Dugam Dinam. A very important verse, First Canto, 17th chapter, text 3. And it says, the cows are Dharma Dugam. Their milk is Dharma. It's religiosity and Dinam. It's very poor. So although the cows are on this level of divinity, or as Krishna Kshetramaj call bovinity, the cows, if you look at who they linked with, brahmanas, demigods, Vedas. This is their kind of lineage. This is their status. But they're very poor. Although they're so important for society, they're poor. Their condition is very poor. Then that verse goes into this depicting their demise. So here, in the same way, the living entities that have this ability, as we recall in the previous verses, simply by hearing the Vedas, you can smell the lotus feet of the Lord. Isn't that fascinating? Just by hearing the Vedic verses, you can smell the feet of the Lord. So we somehow or other can't conceive of that. But this is what we're missing out on. We're missing out on this a connection with Krishna because of our absorption in the material world, and these verses are pointing out this is how encased we are. We're really wrapped up. Again, later on, we're going to hear about vast periods of time and how our life is like 100 little insignificant years, but as we were discussing earlier, you might get to 70 or 80. Lord Brahma's life, compared to ours, is 311 trillion years. Again, a vast period of time. We're going to hear about the universe and how it's 4 billion miles long. It's 4 billion miles. That's a huge distance. But the earth around it is 10 times thicker. And the water around that is 10 times thicker than that. Earth, each ring, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, is 10 times thicker than the previous one. So the little tiny speck inside, I don't know how big it will be comparatively, minuscule little space, is surrounded by vast layers of shell. And it's all pointing out that we're not very significant. And even in this body, we are 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. So our position is very insignificant, therefore we're very poor. But actually our heritage is eternality. Our heritage is that we have this connection with Krishna. And kind of tying into this the disappearance day of Madhvacharya, this verse is talking about how that the Lord's pure devotees, They take compassion upon such unfortunate persons and in a missionary spirit try to persuade them into the line of devotional service. So it's kind of turning the negativity and the reality and the binding nature of the material world to give us an impetus that we must do something for ourselves and we must do something for others. Madhavacharya, one of his teachings that he was, you could say, fighting with the impersonalists that said that we're all one, God and us are one. But his philosophy was that God is one. We're equal to God in quality, but not quantity. Therefore, we can become illusion. This was his philosophical contribution and other things too that he contributed to. But he had this spirit to do something for the world. The world is being bamboozled by the impersonal philosophy, and therefore he did something powerful. He gave a more complete philosophy, and he opened centers to help the world. So each of us is here are benefiting because someone in our life played the missionary role and imbibed us. In my case, I'm going to the streets of Plymouth on a corner. I think it was outside, maybe an electrical shop or something. And there's a little lady with a woolly hat on, I think, at the time. And she was raising funds for the Hare Krishna movement, Mother Jagatam. And she gave me a little book about perfect questions and perfect answers. So she was in this missionary spirit by the power of the pure devotee Srila Prabhupada. He's imbibing us with that same missionary spirit to do something that we can serve Krishna. Our best way of engaging our senses is to engage them in the service of the Lord. And a couple of days ago, Krishna Moy was talking how he was kind of, again, imbibing us, encouraging us to take responsibility for other people. And he mentioned we should all have responsibility for 10 people. So we need devotees to inspire us, to assist, to continue assisting the mission. Of course, I mean, here we are learning how to assist the mission, purifying ourselves, strengthening ourselves, but also playing a part in helping spread Krishna consciousness. Because most people, the vast majority of people, have got no idea of all this limitations in their own existence. They're chasing things, although in it fundamentally they will never, ever be satisfied because it's not built in the way that's satisfied. It's not built in a way for you to find satisfaction. So it needs people to go out there and help spread Krishna consciousness and I probably use it here, persuade them. Try to persuade them to be the life of devotional service. Okay, that's what points came from this verse. Any comments, questions, reflections on this verse? Srinivas Prabhu.
So how long did it take after reading the book for you to come to the temple?
At the time I was in the Marines, so it wasn't so free. I wasn't so invested. But what happened shortly after that, I met another devotee, Hari Kirtan. He was outside Boots. A few devotees are giving out books. And he stopped me and he sold me Science Self-Realization, First Canto Part 3, and I think it was Second Canto Part 1 also. He gave me these three books. And he said, it's worth everything to go to the temple. Those words. The words are probably more of a memory to me. The Science of Civilization was more accessible as a reading book, but his words was very powerful. So I was chewing over what he said, I went to the temple. I can't remember the time frame exactly, but I happened to go. My first time at the temple was on Lord Nrisimha's appearance day. So it must have been, I don't know what year it was, 78, 79, something like that. I don't know what the time frame between me and the first devotee and that, but it all happened quite reasonably quick succession, I think. Anything else? Questions? Reflections?
So So in the present times, when things are where they're going in the world, how much should we put ourselves out to help others? Because it seems like sometimes in situations which are coming in, people are not so much open for helping.
Well, yeah, we have to stretch ourselves a little bit. We have to do something. In my field of care protection, I was inspired by the verse, Govinda go dvijya sura arta hara avatar, that Krishna, he descends, he crosses over to give relief to the distress of the cows, the Brahmas and demigods. So I thought, we have to intervene, we have to do something ourselves, we have to try and play some active role. How much? Well, you have to stretch yourself a bit. You can't crush yourself. It's like even with, if you want to build your muscles up, if you do something really strenuous, it's not going to work. You've got to just stretch your muscles. So you have to do something. Fortunately, we have a kind of institutional method of doing something. We have marathons. I think we have one marathon, two marathons a year. They're kind of good times to align yourself. Okay, for that time, I'm going to do something. I'm going to play some part in the missionary activities. Or you might think, well, I'm really busy now, but there's a guest here. Shall I stop and talk to the guest? That sometimes takes a lot of strength of mind to do that, to put your own time needs aside and give your time to someone else. Of course, fortunately now in the temple, it's more orchestrated. They have a system where you can meet people and have tours and things. So we should do something. How much we should do? We should definitely do something. And we should stretch yourselves a little bit. If it's too casual, we're not going to feel that purification from it in the same way. Prabhu.
Thank you for the class. You were mentioning a few points in terms of how material enjoyment won't bring happiness. And I was just wondering, how can we convince or inspire others to have that same determination? Because to me it seems like, unless, like at least in the modern context, and from myself at least, unless I experience the intense frustration, I still end up pursuing it, and there's very little conviction of that, even though one may be vaguely interested in spiritual life.
Yeah, one lesson is not enough. I mean, here we are, some of us had hundreds and hundreds of lessons, and we're still trying to refresh our memory. Our intelligence has been taken from us. So we're trying to reactivate our intelligence. So we're kind of self-energized to get on with it. Otherwise, we need the association of devotees. When you meet devotees, what are they going to say to you? They're not going to say, go out there, enjoy the material world. They're going to say, come on, guys, give your life to Krishna. So the association of devotees is so fundamentally essential to us, to keep the associated devotees, whether online or personally or whatever, just keep hearing and keep reminding ourselves, because this powerful energy of supernatural power, we've asked for it, and therefore to decouple ourselves against it, we have to be very, very determined. And that determination is re-energized by the association of devotees. Somehow or other, our way of reaching out to the world is to get people to associate with the devotees, because the devotees is the methodology by which people can access Krishna quite directly. When they meet devotees of Krishna, there's something strange about this devotee. There's something about this person. People have that experience. We're carrying Krishna in our missionary activities, and although we may feel like we're a bit out of it, for them, people, the recipients of it, they feel something substantial going on. So it's about, again, keeping ourselves in determination by keeping that association. And you got to keep every verse of the Bhagavatam. Every verse is kind of reminding you. And there's 18,000 verses. And we need all 18,000 to go over and over and over again. Therefore, we have daily classes. And devotees, whether they come here or they're at home, they listen to classes every day. They're tuning in every day. I've somewhere got to hear something and keep reminding myself to refresh our memory. It's about, you know, when people lose their memory, you've got to keep association, and gradually you remember something. It's like sometimes we wake up in the morning, especially if you've been traveling, and you think, where the hell am I? Have you ever had that experience? You wake up, you're not quite sure where you are. You've got to recalibrate your mind. So it's a bit like that. And therefore, by gradually associating things, and your memory becomes refreshed. So we have to refresh our memory because we've been really solidly put into ignorance. And we've got to be determined to get that intelligence back again. It's not gone anywhere. It's just covered over. We've got to unlock it again. And that comes by the magic and power of the association of devotees and the process of devotional service. Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for the class. And just a small thing which got me thinking. As you said that by listening or by contemplating on the verses of Vedas, by which Krishna is to be understood, we can smell the lotus feet of the Lord. That got me thinking that if the verses which meant to describe Krishna are so potent, then how potent the Krishna's holy name is, which is none different than Krishna. And are we really appreciating how much potent it is, and are we really taking that much advantage of it?
Like, yeah, very good observation. And you could say that if you can't smell Krishna's lotus feet when you're chanting the holy name, you got to do more chanting of the holy name to get to that point. That's a barometer. Yeah, very good observation. Is it related? Is it related to the verse?
It is.
Okay, please.
Okay. There was a Mataji. She used to come and look at the deities, and she says somehow I just can't relate to them. But when she went on Sankirtan, that's when she felt much closer to Krishna. It was in trying to distribute the books, that thing. But she couldn't relate to the deities, you know, at all. But it was in her distribution of books. I'm trying to remember, is somebody Gurangi? And she was, and she's done a little book too, herself, relating to Krishna and Prabhupada's books on distribution. Yeah, but she said that, you know, it was in her distribution she felt closer to Krishna than any time, rather than the deities. Yeah. And she said that to Mother Kalangana too. Okay.
Thank you. I think we do experience that intensity of Sankirtan, that intensity of absorption of the mind. You do find a certain kind of ecstasy, if I can use that word. Devotees, they feel sometimes ecstasy in book division. Not all the time. Sometimes it's a hard slog. But sometimes you get a little entrance into something really extraordinary. And generally people don't necessarily exhibit that when they're sweeping a floor, but Sankirtan seems to give you more opportunities to enter that space of complete absorption and dependence on Krishna. Okay, we'll stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.